This is Dave Gloetz of MrRadio.org. I'm here with Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader. How are you doing today, Ben?
Doing okay.
That's good to hear. Today, we're talking about Ben's column in the November 2008 edition of the Reader titled The Chickens Outfox the Foxes. This article is about a conflict in Hyde Park on the south side around a developer's desire to convert University of Chicago property to a couple hotels, and the local residents managed to foil that developer by voting the precinct in which the property resided dry, thus presumably making the hotel not viable. For me, one of the key points of your article is summarized by one of the locals that you quote, Greg Lane. He said, "It looks like a spectacular failure in community relations." Lane says that the University of Chicago never legitimately tried to work with the residents. It surprises me that an institution known for its erudition would not know to work with Hyde Park residents. What do you think about that?
I'm surprised that you would be surprised. University of Chicago has actually a long history of battling with people in and around Hyde Park over various of its development deals. This goes back to the 50s, and the university is quite proud, pretty much wiping away what they call slums on like 51st Street and that go through the heart of Hyde Park in order to bring in new development. So there's just a sort of long history. In this particular instance, I thought they really mishandled things. I just can't understand how they thought residents would go along with their proposal to demolish this old hospital, which has sort of a regal look to it. If they were to demolish it and put up some kind of splendid architectural structure, they might have won over the locals, but they had a rather ordinary slab of concrete that they wanted to put up.
So you're saying that in actuality, this is typical of the universities dealing with local residents as regards to development?
Well, at the risk of sounding too cynical, I think this is typical of all major institutions in Chicago and the way they deal with the public. I think they take their lead from City Hall. The standard rule is you start out strong with aggressive offense. You siphon off opposition by winning a few of the locals, dividing them, playing one faction against the other. You win your endorsement from City Hall so that you're guaranteed to get the zoning changes and the building permits that you need. In some cases, you get the subsidies that you need. So I think the standard operating procedure in this town is to involve the larger public as little as possible because, for the obvious reason, the more people you involve, the less control you have.
Your article describes how Hyde Park residents got signatures for a petition to put a referendum on the ballot and how they successfully defended the signatures in court. And I'm quoting from your article here. The university's response was that they got lawyers that asked that each and every one of the 289 signers be deposed under oath about whether he or she had actually signed the petition. They also wanted each signature examined by a handwriting expert who had compared it to the signature on the resident's voter registration. I'm interested in how this reflects the experience of candidates running for local public office.
We've talked about this before, and it's one of my favorite subjects, the lengths to which people will go to manipulate our Byzantine election law to eliminate any possibility that they'll have a strong opponent or any opponent in an election. Our system is particularly devastating to third-party candidates and independents. But even given all that, this was an extreme case. The lawyers involved were telling me that they don't know of any other court case involving so many signatures where the signers were going to be deposed. That's a rather lengthy and cumbersome process that requires ordinary citizens who did nothing more than sign a petition to put a hold in their life and come down to a law office and sit down and swear under oath that they, yes, indeed, signed the petition that they say they signed.
So you don't normally see this in regular elections?
What we have seen in regular elections is where it's incumbent on part of the contested candidate whose petitions have been challenged to retrace his steps. So, for instance, if the incumbent challenges the signatures of his challenger, then that challenger has to go back to the residents who signed it and have them sign an affidavit attesting that, yes, they are indeed the person, the people who signed the petitions.
That's somewhat as elaborate as this.
Well, the difference is that the onus is on the candidate himself. In this regard, it would be the signers who would have to give up their life for that brief moment to be deposed. It clearly it was an attempt by the university and its lawyers to forestall the proceeding for as long as they could so that the election had passed and then the whole issue would be moot. because you can't vote the precinct dry if there's no election in which to vote it dry.
So they're just trying to tie it up in court,
essentially. Exactly. It's a typical strategy, and it didn't work because the judge ruled against them, and so then they had to move to Plan B, which was to try to defeat the referendum. I contend that had they not even bothered with the challenge or the petitions, there's a better chance that they could have won in the precincts themselves. They might have convinced enough voters to vote against the prohibition.
They tried to do it the Chicago way.
They tried to do it the Chicago way, and the Chicago way didn't work. So they went to the other Chicago way. The whole thing was the Chicago way. What I loved about this story so much is the notion of the chickens out foxing the fox. I think the lesson here is one that an old wise friend of mine once told me about the world in general. And he said, every system has its system. What the folks in Hyde Park, the anti-development folks in Hyde Park, did was they used the system against itself. So there's a larger lesson there, I think, for people all over the city, that it's all good and well to have idealistic visions and aspirations and grand designs for what your neighborhood should look like. But if you want any of them to come true, or if at the very least you don't want the other side just to plow everything over, then you have to really understand how Chicago works.
You can't be Pollyanna about it.
That's correct.
Fifth Ward Alderman Leslie Hairston and others in Hyde Park have said that dry precincts are a serious threat to business development and therefore the community's economic health. What do you think of that?
What she's really saying is don't fight it, just succumb. I don't buy that. Why should anybody do that? It's like saying give up the one tool you have, the one effective control. It's typical Chicago, actually. It's a typical Chicago attitude. You concede before you start the fight. Oh, okay, I won't vote you dry, so we're just going to allow you to do whatever you want to me. It sort of reminds me of our whole stand on the Olympics, where people are supposed to hold off on making demands of the city in regards to the Olympics until we have the Olympics. Well, people, once we have the Olympics, they have no obligation. They have no reason to make any concessions whatsoever. That's why I say it's a typical Chicago attitude. You know, just let us do whatever we want to do, and in the long run, it'll be in your best interest, trust me. When has that ever worked out? And I'm not being cynical, merely realistic.
On that realistic note, we'll leave it there. Ben Jarofsky, the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Dave.
This is Dave Gloetz. We've been speaking about the rest of the story. When you have a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for further installments or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.